I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. It's open enrollment season for Maryland's Health Benefits Exchange. Kathy Westcote, president of the nonprofit Healthcare Access Maryland, is here to discuss their plans to reach out to the more than 16,000 eligible people not yet insured who live in the Baltimore region. Then Democratic Congressman Chris Van Hollen joins us to talk about his campaign to fill the U.S. Senate seat Barbara Mikulski has decided to relinquish. Van Hollen currently represents Maryland's 8th congressional district, which sprawls through parts of Carroll, Frederick, and Montgomery counties. Today we'll get his thoughts on newly elected Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, what it means to be a progressive candidate, and whether voters value elected experience. That's Midday after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Very glad to have you with us. Later in the hour, we're going to welcome Democratic Representative Chris Van Hollen to our studio. He's running for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Barbara Mikulski, who announced she would not run again. Van Hollen has a campaign war chest of $4 million, a lot more than his opponents, and he already has begun to air television ads in the Baltimore market. Yet polls show another story. A recent Washington Post University of Maryland poll showed him trailing his leading challenger, Congresswoman Donna Edwards, by 10 points. That same poll showed that if Representative Elijah Cummings, who represents the 7th District east of Van Hollen's, if Cummings were to enter the race, he would be the instant front runner. We'll also ask Van Hollen about newly elected House Speaker Paul Ryan. And we welcome your comments and questions for Congressman Chris Van Hollen. We invite you to call in. Our number is 410-662-8780. Or send us an email, midday@wypr.org. We have a lot to talk about, so we hope you'll stay tuned for that. But first, we welcome Kathy Westcote, president and CEO of the nonprofit Healthcare Access Maryland. Yesterday was the beginning of the 2015-2016 open enrollment period for health insurance plans under the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Enrollment is open for 3 months through January 31st, 2016. The Maryland Health Benefit Exchange estimates there are more than 300,000 people who are uninsured and still eligible for coverage, that is to say subsidies on the exchange, coverage in Maryland. Data shows more than 16,000 eligible uninsured people live in the Baltimore region alone. Kathy Westcote, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
What is new and different? What's changing this year in enrollment?
So I think we're going to see definitely some differences this year with people. There are already a lot of people enrolled, but I think a lot of people are going to be switching plans, looking at other options that are available, or also individuals who have selected plans who are realizing that they've not selected the appropriate plan. For instance, we have seen individuals who have selected a bronze plan, which has a lower monthly premium, however, more out-of-pocket costs. And as they have used the plan over the past year or so, they realize that their health care needs are actually more significant. So they may be better off in a higher-level metal plan with a higher...
Higher-level metal, meaning silver or gold.
Silver or gold, yes. Thank you. This is, you know, lingo we use around the office all day. But so I think people are realizing that they may not have selected the appropriate plan based on their health care needs. A lot of folks were looking, you know, what's the cheapest option for me on a monthly basis, but realized or didn't realize the downstream costs associated with having a lower level plan.
And you say people can just stay in the plan that they signed in last year?
Absolutely. So everybody...
That wasn't true last year, was it? They had to re-enroll, didn't they?
They did last year. So this year, they're going to be able to... they don't have to do anything. They've likely have gotten a notice from their health insurance company stating what their new premium is. As long as they're satisfied with that, they can do nothing and just move on. Some carriers have had significant rate hikes, such as CareFirst. There's a 26% increase in health insurance premiums. So I think a lot of those people are going to look at other options that might be available for them. At least that's what I hope we see.
And this three-month period is the only time somebody can make that kind of adjustment, right?
That's correct. So individuals should really try to sign up by December 15th for January 1st coverage. But you are correct. It is just this short time period.
So essentially, you're hoping that most people who think they need to make some adjustment, some change in their policy, or who don't have a policy at all, will do it in the next 6 weeks.
Yes, absolutely.
What do people need to know about how to enroll in the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange?
Well, I think first and foremost, what you really need to know is what your needs are. And for some people, looking at all the options are available are can be daunting. There's over 60 plans available. I would strongly suggest for individuals who have selected plans on their own and who aren't quite sure if they selected the right thing or not to really seek the assistance of an in-person counselor or navigator, those that we have at Healthcare Access Maryland.
How do you do that?
So there's a variety of ways. You can come into our office at 201 East Baltimore Street. We have a whole team of navigators who are available to sit down with individuals on a daily basis to
basically open business hours?
Yep,
9 to 5?
Yep. We are open 8:30 to 5, and we also have, 4:30, and we also have two satellite sites, one in Anne Arundel County and one in Reisterstown Road. So you can pull up our website, hcamaryland.org, to see the schedule and to see the addresses. But I think the in-person assistance is really, really valuable if you're not clear if you've selected the right plan or not. So it'll give you an opportunity to sit with the navigator, to talk about your healthcare usage over the past year, to talk about your copays and your out-of-pocket costs, just to make sure that you are actually in the right plan.
Talk to us about the people who are not insured at this point. How many do we think there are in Maryland?
So I'll just give you an example. In Baltimore City, we think we probably still have about 15,000-20,000 people who are not yet enrolled that are eligible or could be. We're finding that these are individuals who have language barriers, you know, Spanish speaking, African Americans, individuals who are homeless or who have, multiple sociocultural needs. So there are pockets of people who are uninsured. We are working with the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange, and we are working
with the state agency, correct.
And we will be doing lots of TV and radio ads in the upcoming upcoming weeks to do some specialized target to those areas.
I want to play a clip from a YouTube video that Healthcare Access Maryland, your group, made back in January called, in English, Need Health Insurance?
Nosotros podemos ayudarle a llenar una solicitud en internet
a través de Maryland Health Connection
para averiguar si usted califica para la cobertura de salud
gratis o de bajo costo.
So that's obviously in Spanish. Mm-hmm. But I'm assuming that over the air ads on radio or television are not targeted enough to get to the people that you're trying to reach. I mean, how are you planning to reach the people you just described?
Actually, we have found that radio is a very it's a really good way for us to reach our population. But in addition, we are having four enrollment events, I know, in the in our region. One is just specific to Spanish speakers that we will be holding in Highland Town. So there will be lots of ads and marketing around generating interest for that enrollment event. We also plan to have three other events in our region where people can come in. We're having one at a hotel where we plan to do lots of marketing and media. People do find, I think the website can be daunting for people who are not necessarily familiar with selecting or enrolling or purchasing things online. So we're finding that people who come to see us in person are those that really do need that in-person assistance. So we do have lots of Spanish speakers on staff, so we do try to make the experience as smooth as possible for people who are not familiar with the program.
I'm Sheila Cass. This is Midday on WYPR. We're talking to Kathy Westcoat of Healthcare Access Maryland about making it possible for people to sign up for health insurance. We just have her with us for another 5 minutes or so, but if you have a question, a quick question about Obamacare or how to sign up, 410-662-8780 is our phone number. You could give us a quick call. So you're reaching out to people. Are you finding that the dismal launch the first year of Obamacare, when the website worked so poorly and mm-hmm. so many people had so many trouble, does that still haunt people's understanding of what it is to sign up for Obamacare in Maryland? Are you finding any resistance there?
I think perhaps a bit that does remain to be seen, but last year was such a remarkably smooth year where people were able to get enrolled very quickly, easily, and readily, that I think that the public has gained a lot more confidence than we had in that initial year. So I think word has spread. Really, our best mode of communication is word of mouth. We find a lot of people who may have had a bad experience, but then they can't come back, and they meet with one of our navigators and have a really great, tremendous experience, and then they tell their family members and friends. But I think over the past year, we have regained a lot of confidence, and that speaks volumes as our enrollment numbers have increased.
Well, one of the things the audit of that first year showed was improper storage of Social Security numbers and other personal information. So is that something that people think twice about when they are going on a website or even talking to a stranger about their personal health situation? What do you do to assure them that their information is safe?
Well, I think anytime somebody's purchasing on, things online, entering your credit card number or entering in any information can be a little scary for those. But I think what happens is people come, they meet with our staff, and they realize how, caring, kind, and compassionate they are. And their interest is to get them enrolled. And we've been assured that there are appropriate securities in place to make sure that their information does not go anywhere else besides the web portal.
So what would you say the lessons learned from the past 2 years of doing this have been?
I would say the lessons learned are I cannot underestimate the need for the in-person assistance, having somebody to talk to, just going online yourself and looking at the complex myriad of plans. Again, there's 60 plans, multiple different metal levels. It's really, really important to understand what your specific, unique healthcare needs are. I think people often went in trying to select the lowest price plan, the lowest premium plan on a monthly basis, but are now realizing that at the end of the day, that's actually not the best for them. So I just can't encourage enough individuals who have any questions or any hesitations about their plan, not if they're not sure if they're in the right thing, to come to our offices, visit us online, or come to one of our enrollment events in the next 60 days.
Which people can find on your website.
Yes, they can.
Which again is?
www.hcamaryland.org, or they can call us. We have a toll-free number at 1-877-223-5201.
877-223-5201.
So any questions at all, you can just start by giving us a call and we can help direct you. Perhaps they want the in-person assistance, or we can refer them to a state number where they may be able to enroll actually over the phone with a state representative.
Well, Matt, who is a contractor in Baltimore, has a question for you right now. Matt, welcome to Midday.
Hi. I just wanted to say I keep hearing about how people aren't aware of the subsidies, and they're chalking up all these people not having insurance and not being aware. I just wanted to say that my wife and I have been trying for 2 years to get insurance through Maryland Health Connection and have been unsuccessful. They, as a contractor, my gross income and adjusted gross income are very different, and I bring home about $30,000 or $40,000 a year, and they're giving us insurance prices based on $100,000 a year.
The Maryland Health Connection is the website that where people can actually can sign up. What would you say to Matt?
So my question, Matt, where do you live? What part of the state?
I'm in northern Baltimore County.
Northern Baltimore County. I'm just wondering, have you ever had the opportunity to sit down with a navigator to go through all of your financials and to kind of go through all of that information on an in-person basis?
My wife has been taking care of this mostly, and she's actually spent entire days on the phone with them. They have told her that there's nowhere to actually go. The people that she gets on the phone with told her that she can't meet with anyone in person. In fact, we were denied a meeting because they said that our case was under review.
Okay. Yeah, that's not accurate. I mean, the whole reason why the Connector program was created was to provide that in-person tailored assistance. So perhaps I can get your number before we leave here today, and I'll make sure somebody contacts you.
Well, Matt, before you hang up, if you would give our producer your number, we'll put you and Kathy Westcoat to get together so that there's some way for you to you or your wife to actually sit down with somebody. Kathy, thanks for calling us, Matt. Kathy, how many? What is the goal for this enrollment period?
The goal of the state would like to see another 35,000 people enrolled in our region, which is Baltimore City, Baltimore County, and Arundel County, which is the central region. You know, we represent about a half or a third of that. So we would like to find everybody else who has not yet enrolled to get them enrolled. And we do have a targeted approach, again, with the radio ads, with our enrollment fairs that are going to be held in strategic locations in our region.
And what is the penalty for someone not enrolling in insurance?
So the penalty in this year for 2016 is the greater of 2.5% of yearly household income, or $695 per person. Last year, it was 2% of yearly household income, or $325 per person.
So it's like it's not quite doubled, but close to.
Close to, yeah. The per person has actually doubled pretty much, little less than doubled.
But. So a couple with one child, three people, that would be close to, that would be more than $2,000 in penalty.
Yeah.
And that sounds like that's premium money. That much
money
would be enough to actually get some kind of a policy.
Absolutely. You know, at the bare minimum, it would cover, the lowest level of a bronze plan. So it's better to use that money to actually get a plan versus to assume the penalty.
So we're about to wrap this conversation up, Kathy Westcott. Is there some closing thought that you want to leave with listeners about this open enrollment period?
I just think the take-home message today is assess your plan. Be absolutely sure that you are in the correct plan. If you have any questions at all, if you're not sure, please give us a call. We can help steer you in the right direction, either in person or over the phone.
And your phone number again, 877-223-5201.
That's correct.
We'll put that on our website. Kathy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Kathy Westcott is president and CEO of the nonprofit Healthcare Access Maryland, which will be educating and enrolling consumers in the Baltimore region during this open enrollment period that lasts through January. We'll take a short break now. When we return, we'll focus on politics. Joining us will be Representative Chris Van Hollen, who's running for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Senator Barbara Mikulski. If you have questions for Representative Van Hollen, we invite you to call in. Our number is 410-662-8780, or send us an email, midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cass. For the rest of our show today, we welcome Congressman Chris Van Hollen to our studio. He represents Maryland's 8th Congressional District, which encompasses parts of Montgomery, Frederick, and Carroll counties. Congressman Van Hollen was elected to Congress in 2002. He is the ranking member of the House Budget Committee, that is to say the top Democrat on that committee. His public service record includes advocacy for education, veterans, energy, the environment, health care, and civil rights. Before Congress, he served 4 years in the Maryland House of Delegates and 8 years in the Maryland State Senate. He's a graduate of Swarthmore College, the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University, and Georgetown University Law Center. He lives in Kensington, and right now he is in our studio. Welcome back to Midday.
It is great to be here. Thanks, Sheila.
We welcome your comments and questions for Chris Van Hollen. You can call us at 410-662-8780, or if it's long distance, you can call us toll-free at 866-661-9309. Of course, you can always send us an email at midday@wypr.org. You have built up a fair amount of seniority in the House. You are the Democratic point person on quite a few important things like the budget. Why do you want to be in the Senate? Why give up that seniority?
Well, Sheila, I think the Senate provides an opportunity to do things for the entire state of Maryland. I believe I've done a good job representing a part of Maryland, the 8th Congressional District, which, as you said, includes Carroll County, Frederick County, parts of Montgomery County. But as I look around our state, I do think there are things that we can and should be doing to boost economic growth, boost wages, provide more opportunities to more Marylanders. And I think the Senate is a place where I would be able to get more of that done. And so with the help of the people of Maryland, I hope to have that opportunity to work with them.
What do you most want to get done in the Senate?
I would like to focus on economic growth and opportunity, making sure that every child who grows up in Maryland or the United States has an opportunity to meet their full potential, their God-given gifts. And we've got a lot to do to help boost job growth here in the Baltimore area, in Baltimore City, certainly, as well as around the country. And I've put forward a number of specific proposals to do that. I would also welcome the opportunity to sit down in an inclusive fashion with leaders in Baltimore, both in terms of public officials, but also folks in the nonprofit and private sectors, to develop a more coherent strategy for bringing back more manufacturing jobs to Maryland and the Baltimore area, and looking for ways to improve the pipeline from learning to jobs. So more collaboration between the employers who are going to be hiring people graduating from community colleges or four-year colleges and the programs and skills learning opportunities we have in those institutions.
There's a lot of attention to that already. What federal piece do you think is missing that you could trigger from a perch in the Senate?
Well, there are a number of things that we should be doing. First of all, on a national level, but this would also greatly benefit Baltimore and Maryland, we should shut down these tax breaks that incentivize some American corporations to move their jobs and their capital overseas. That makes no sense. We should be shutting down those loopholes and investing those funds instead in job opportunities in the United States, Maryland, and the Baltimore area. Number two, we should be incentivizing more apprenticeship programs so that when people go through a particular learning experience, there's a guarantee or close to a guarantee that they will get a good paying job afterwards. I also think there are lots of opportunities to better design tax credits and work to combine federal, state, and local tax credits and incentives to bring back manufacturing and boost job growth and wages.
We spoke with your chief competitor, Congresswoman Donna Edwards, about 3 weeks ago. What's the biggest difference between you and Donna Edwards?
Well, there are a number of differences. In a Democratic primary, you don't find a huge difference in terms of our voting records or where we necessarily stand on the issues. But I think if you look at my record, from the time I was in the state legislature to my time as a member of Congress, it's been a record of actually getting things done, getting things across the finish line. When I served in the state legislature, I passed major pieces of legislation on gun safety, on education, including working to negotiate the Thornton legislation, which provided a huge boost in funding for Baltimore City and Maryland schools. And when I got to Congress, Nancy Pelosi, when she was Speaker, she asked me to become assistant to the Speaker because of a record of getting things done. And as part of that leadership team, we worked with the President to pass the Affordable Care Act. That was not easy. I mean, that required getting the Democrats together to support it because we didn't have a single Republican vote in the House of Representatives. And by the way, we had a majority that was smaller than the Republican majority today in the House. So leadership required that we get people together on that, passing the Economic Recovery Bill, which took our economy from free fall to stopping the free fall and beginning the building process, things like the Wall Street Reform Bill, and a number of other pieces of legislation where I've, wherever possible, worked with Republicans on a bipartisan basis to get things done for people with disabilities, to help kids with cancer. So I am somebody who, in addition to working to get things done on the big things, looks for opportunities to work together to get things done in these other very important areas.
We have people who want to talk to you already, and so I am going to, I'm not going to hog the mic here. Vincent in Towson, welcome to Midday.
Well, it's great that Chris is in Baltimore today talking about economic growth. I was just wondering if he could tell us about how he would help the city and all the people who live and work here. I'm working harder than ever here in Baltimore, and it doesn't feel like I'm getting ahead.
Vincent, thanks for calling.
Well, that's an experience that people are having throughout the state of Maryland and, in fact, throughout the country. One of the things we're seeing is that the productivity of American workers continues to go up. People are working harder than ever, like the caller said, but they feel like they're on a treadmill and not getting ahead and in some cases falling behind. And there are a number of things we need to do to address this issue. But one is we need to use our tax code not to reward special interests like corporate jets or Kentucky racehorses. We need to incentivize businesses to increase the pay that they give to their employees. So I strongly believe in increasing the minimum wage. I strongly believe in equal pay for equal work. But I believe we need to go beyond that. And if we can use this tax code for these things that we should not be doing, we should be doing more to leverage the tax code to help increase pay. So let me give you an example, because I've introduced legislation to do this. It's called the CEO Employee Paycheck Fairness Act. And it's very simple. Corporations should not get to deduct, as a matter of federal tax law, the bonuses, the million-dollar bonuses they pay to CEOs and executives, if they're not giving people like the caller a pay increase. It makes no sense to provide this federal subsidy to the tax code to companies that are only rewarding their CEOs and executives and not helping their employees. That is one of many things we can do.
The subsidy you're talking about is just that salaries, including bonuses, count as business expenses.
Yes, but there's because of a wrinkle in the tax code, you're only able to deduct up to $1 million in salary. But if you provide the additional compensation in the form of bonuses, you can essentially take a tax deduction for the entire bonus, $1 million, $2 million, $20 million. That is a crazy system, especially when these corporations are paying bonuses to executives and either cutting their workforce or freezing pay or cutting pay. No federal taxpayer should be subsidizing a system where corporations get those, you know, great deductions without increasing pay. That's one of many things we can do. The other thing is, as I said, to bring back more manufacturing jobs. And I do think there's a way to use our tax credits more effectively, especially focus them on areas like Baltimore City, which have seen a lot of disinvestment over the years.
Serena is calling us from Silver Spring. Welcome to the show, Serena.
Oh, hello. Yes, I just wanted to mention Senator Mikulski wasn't just there for the big issues. She was also there on little things like when I needed help with my Social Security payments. And I just wanted to ask the congressman whether constituent services are important to him.
They are absolutely essential. And we've taken great pride in my current office, district office, to make sure that we treat every constituent request and need with the utmost seriousness. Because while that may not be a big national question, it's a big issue in the person who's being impacted. So we've worked very hard to prevent people from losing their homes to banks during the foreclosure process. We've worked very hard to make sure that veterans get the care they need. These are individuals who have served our country with honor, and we should make sure that they're getting the health care and other benefits they deserve. Seniors who have paid into their Social Security system, we should make sure that they get their support in a timely manner. So that is something we take with the utmost seriousness and very proud of the record our office has in that area.
Serena, thanks for calling. There hasn't been, as far as I know, a lot of polling in the Senate race, but there was the poll that the Washington Post University of Maryland released about 3 weeks ago, which found you trailing Representative Donna Edwards by about 10%. What's your reaction to that?
Well, let me just say, you know, I've been through lots of campaigns. I've seen a lot of polling. In the end, of course, what matters is whether people get out there and support you on Election Day. But we've done our own internal polling, and we have very different results than that Washington Post poll. And I should say that Barry Raskovar, a very well-known and respected columnist for the Baltimore Sun, showed why that Washington Post poll was just wrong in their methodology. He did a good job of discrediting it. But look, I really don't think we should be focused on these polls. I think we should be focused on what we're doing to meet Marylanders here in Baltimore City, in the Baltimore area, and around the state, and address the real challenges before them.
And that reminds me, because I thought you were heading toward the phrase, the poll that really counts, the primary in which you are competing with Representative Donna Edwards and others is next April 26th. I'm sure you have the date engraved
That's
in your
right,
memory.
April 26th. And, you know, we're encouraging all Marylanders, and in this case, Democrats, to come out in the primary throughout the state and hope they will follow very closely this debate and conversation, including some of the issues we're talking about right here on your show.
But I raised the poll because it struck me when I read the results. We're seeing a lot in the presidential races, especially on the Republican side, voters seeming to prefer the outsider, prefer someone who hasn't held many offices along the way, hasn't spent a lot of years in elected service. And you are nothing if not an insider, Chris Van Hollen. I mean, I think it was about 90 seconds after you announced you were running to replace Barbara Mikulski that Senator Harry Reid, who was then the Democratic leader of the U.S. Senate, endorsed you. So I'm wondering whether you find that that's a burden, that all these different offices you've held and the route you've taken to get where you are, whether that's not something that actually appeals to voters.
Actually, I think, Sheila, what appeals to voters are people who can actually get things done. I think what frustrates people the most are people who just talk about issues and never translate that talk into action. And one of the reasons I've got such broad grassroots support, and by the way, when I ran in 2002, I also ran with a huge amount of grassroots support. In this case, not just in the area I currently represent, but throughout the state of Maryland, you're finding community leaders, community activists, as well as local elected officials, many of whom have worked with both candidates in this campaign, stepping up to support me. And the reason for that is that I've been able to get things done. So, for example, why is the county executive of Prince George's County supporting Chris Van Hollen? This, of course, is the home district to the person who I'm running against in the primary. Why are people like Senator—
And I should tell you that when I asked Donna Edwards that, yeah, she basically said, well, she wasn't surprised that the county executive of her county is supporting an insider, you.
Well, actually, county executives are people who need to get things done. The local level of government is the closest to the people. But you've got, in addition to Rashern Baker, you've got people like State Senator Joanne Benson. She's also interested in delivering for her constituents. This is another state legislator from Prince George's County, a delegate, Tawana Gaines, who's the immediate past head of the Women's Caucus in the state legislature in the House of Delegates, also from Prince George's, and a lot of mayors in Prince George's County. They're not supporting me because I'm insider. Mayors are interested in getting things done. And when I had the opportunity to represent a part of Prince George's County, that's what I did. We got funds for community centers. We worked with Senator Mikulski on the African American Museum and Cultural Center, money for transportation projects. That's what Baltimore needs. They need that kind of federal investment. Senator Mikulski has been able to deliver that, and I think the state is looking for somebody who also has a track record of getting things done. Again, you know, a lot of people can talk about these issues, but the reason you have activists and community leaders throughout the state supporting me is because of our work together to actually deliver.
That's Congressman Chris Van Hollen, candidate for U.S. Senate in the Democratic primary here on Midday. We're going to take a quick break now. When we turn, we'll continue our conversation with Chris Van Hollen. You can be part of the conversation. Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm here with Chris Van Hollen, congressman who represents Maryland's 8th District, parts of Montgomery, Frederick, and Carroll counties, and is running for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Senator Barbara Mikulski. We're taking your calls, 410-662-8780, and your emails at midday@wypr.org. Before I get back to two of the calls, let me ask you at least one non-campaign question. Really, it's about the House where you serve now. You know Paul Ryan pretty well. You've been the ranking Democrat on the House Budget Committee, where he's made a name for himself. Yes. You were quoted in the Washington Post recently saying that the Wisconsin Republicans' proposals are, quote, very hostile to federal employees, close quote. What kind of a speaker do you expect Paul Ryan to be?
Well, look, I wish Paul Ryan all the best. I hope that he will be a speaker who reaches out to everybody in the House and works with different groups to bring us together. What I do know is when you look at the Paul Ryan budget, it is a budget that would divide the country. What it does is cut deeply into our investments in areas like education, in health care. It turns Medicare into a voucher plan. And while it cuts deeply into important investments, the one thing it doesn't cut is a single special interest tax break. It doesn't cut tax breaks for corporate jets. It doesn't cut tax breaks for hedge fund managers. And so it seeks to, you know, reduce the deficit on the backs of seniors and students and really important investments in our kids. So we have deep differences on his budget approach and his approach to the economy, which I think is a trickle-down approach. I mean, when Paul Ryan teamed up with Mitt Romney, they put out their economic plan. It was a trickle-down economic plan as opposed to growing the economy with more shared prosperity. And in order to make sure we have an economy that works for everybody, we've got to do some of the things I talked about at the early part of the show, closing some of these tax breaks that, you know, cause American companies to move overseas. I was just here in Baltimore today at the site of the new Under Armour headquarters, where it will be as part of the Sagamore Development Group, and had the opportunity to visit one of the places that they've opened up for innovation, trying to bring more startups right here to the Baltimore area, innovative startups. And that's over at the Westport site. And that's the kind of thing we should be focused on. And frankly, the Ryan budget would take us in the wrong direction. It would cut the kind of investments we need to be making.
So substantively, you really you disagree with him. Do you think he will do a better job or be more able to unify Republicans? And do you think he will have any interest in negotiating with Democrats as Speaker?
Well, what we saw with Speaker Boehner was not a lack of interest. It wasn't a lack of personal interest on the part of John Boehner of talking with Democrats. It's that whenever he talked to Democrats and tried to work with us to get things done, the Tea Party portion of the Republican caucus would cut his legs out from under him and withdraw their support. And I see no evidence that that Tea Party faction will be any more cooperative in the long run with Paul Ryan. He tried to negotiate what I would call a prenup agreement with the Tea Party faction in his caucus. They did not give him what he wants. But look, again, if he's going to be able to reach out, that would be obviously a good thing. Speaker Boehner, on the way out the door, did the country and, in fact, did Paul Ryan a great favor. We were able to pass a number of important initiatives. I was pleased to be the Democratic floor leader in that effort, where we reduced the negative impact of the sequester. So we lifted the sequester cap so we can make need investments in the economy. We made sure that these big hikes in Medicare Part B premiums did not go into effect. We shored up the Social Security Disability Trust Fund, so we are able to get things done. And what I'm hoping, Sheila, is that it's not just Republican speakers who announced they're leaving the Congress who are able to get things done. Because let me tell you what the final vote on that was. 100% of Democrats voted for it, but only 79 Republicans, not a majority of the Republicans voted for that package. And so I'm glad Speaker Boehner was willing to put it forward. I don't know if Paul Ryan will have any more luck or not.
Stuart is calling us from Hyattsville. Stuart, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I think anything progressive Marylanders enjoy about Representative Van Hollen's politics, they'll get from Representative Don Edwards. people that look like Chris Van Hollen. The Senate is lacking in diversity, and Marylanders would have a great opportunity to elect a progressive African-American woman.
Stuart, I appreciate the phone call. That obviously is sort of the elephant in the room. What role does race play in this campaign? You are white. Donna Edwards is black.
Well, in my experience, Sheila, what Marylanders want, what Americans want, is to have a representative who they believe is best able to move forward an agenda that meets the needs that they care about. And the reason you have people like County Executive Rashard Baker, who African-American leader in Prince George's County, or County Executive Ike Leggett supporting me, or the people I mentioned earlier, people like State Senator Joanne Benson or Delegate Tawana Gaines, is because they want to make sure that they have a senator who can advance all the issues that are important to working people and working Marylanders. And it's one thing to have cast votes on these issues. It's another thing to have gotten these things done. And so when I talk to people throughout the state, what they're focused on is somebody who can bring Maryland together, who can focus on our common needs and our common interests. And that is why I have such a diverse group of people supporting me in this race. So at the end of the day, this will be a debate about visions and the ability to actually move the agenda forward. And that's why I have such broad support within the state of Maryland, as opposed to a lot of groups outside of the state of Maryland, which is the case with the other campaign.
That same Washington Post University of Maryland poll showed that if Elijah Cummings, who represents the 7th District, the district east of yours, not quite as much geographic territory, but an equally oddly shaped district. If Elijah Cummings were to get into the race, he would instantly be the front runner. What do you make of that? Do you think that is some reflection of race in the campaign? And do you have a strategy if Elijah Cummings gets into the race?
Well, Elijah Cummings is a dear friend. We've worked together first in the state legislature, and now as members of Congress. Elijah did a terrific job and is doing a terrific job as the senior Democrat on the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, did a great job on the Benghazi hearings and revealed very clearly that this was a political witch hunt against Hillary Clinton rather than a serious effort to find out what happened in Benghazi. And we worked together on a host of issues, including the issue of lead paint poisoning. And he's been a good colleague. And I respect whatever decision he makes. And, you know, he'll have to make that decision. And whatever he decides, the campaign will move forward. What we're doing now is getting out and around the state and talking to people about issues that are important to them. That's why I was here in Baltimore today visiting with some of the job creators over at Under Armour. And next week I'll be at Humanum, which is a nonprofit organization that works on workforce development, skills training issues.
You have already started running television ads in the Baltimore market. Where do you see the need to spend the most during this campaign?
Well, this campaign is going to be a Maryland-wide campaign. We're going to be in every community in every part of the state, north and south, east and west. Obviously, there's a large population in the Baltimore area. The good news is that I've had the opportunity to work with many of the leaders in Baltimore during my time in the Congress, but also during my time during the state legislature. And so have focused on a lot of issues that are important to the city. So we're going to continue to do that, continue to meet people, talk about issues that are important to them, get feedback and ideas, because one of the things I've learned in public office is that the feedback we get from constituents, people in the neighborhoods, is the most important thing in terms of coming up with solutions and making the changes we need.
Karen is calling from Silver Spring. Hi, Karen.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Congressman. Good afternoon. My question is about science. Our state is really quite fortunate to have great science and research facilities such as the National Institutes of Health, the Goddard Space Center. What is your commitment to supporting ongoing science and research for the state? Obviously, there are some economic impacts, including the creation of jobs, but looking really more at the science and the research and the helpfulness to our state as well as for the nation.
Well, you're absolutely right. Investing in scientific research and innovation has not only resulted in a great breakthroughs that have, you know, helped patients and individuals throughout our country and, in fact, around the world. It also has been a great driver of economic growth in Maryland and around the country. Right now, the congressional district I represent is the home to the National Institutes of Health as well as to the Food and Drug Administration. And there's no doubt in my mind that we are currently underinvesting in this important scientific research, which is why in the budget that I put forth on behalf of my Democratic colleagues, like the president's budget, like President Obama's budget, I significantly increase the part of the budget that could be dedicated to this kind of scientific research and innovation. I was just recently at NIH with Director Collins, and he said that one of the things that keeps him up at night is the fact that NIH is no longer able to fund nearly as many meritorious proposals, proposals that could be coming up with cures and treatments for diseases that plague American families. And he worries about the fact that young people, when they see that these good grant proposals are not being funded, that they will not pursue a career in science. And in fact, we're losing many of our great scientists to other countries like China that are copying our great model that has been successful in the past. So we need to invest more in science and research, which is why it was important that we took the small step last week of lifting these so-called sequester caps, but we need to do more.
Karen, thanks for your call. We are almost out of time. One of the realities of this race is that you've got a lot more cash, like $4 million, 10 times as much as Donna Edwards. Is basically money spent on media going to be the determining factor in this race?
No, I believe at the end of the day, this is about grassroots support, which is why we've got volunteers as we speak knocking on doors, making phone calls. I've always run a big grassroots campaign, and that's the way it's going to be. But I am pleased with the support I'm getting. If you look at the numbers you're talking about, it's from individuals throughout Maryland, whereas if you look at the funds coming to the Edwards campaign, 70% of that funding is coming from outside of the state of Maryland, people who have no connection with the state of Maryland, whereas 70% of the funds that we've raised are from individuals within Maryland. So that's another sign of strength, because those are individuals who are going to actually be out there voting, who care about the future of our state.
And on that note, we'll leave it. Thank you.
Thank you
for spending some time with us.
Thank
Representative
you.
Chris Van Hollen of Maryland's 8th Congressional District is running for the U.S. Senate seat. We want to thank him for spending time with us. We want to thank listeners who were part of this show. And we want to thank the Diz for supplying lunch for Midday Guests today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Bremington. It has signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. It's open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends on the web at www.thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Sheila Kast. I'm glad you've been with us. Stay tuned for Here and Now, and tune in tomorrow as we kick off the first of many conversations with candidates vying to become mayor of Baltimore. We'll speak with Baltimore City Councilman Carl Stokes. So come back for that.
Midday's producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producers are Melody Simmons and Connor Graham. The Midday intern is Adam Dronberg. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.